Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Have no doubt it's now a trend. It's not only in France, but also in Romania, Moldova, and even Germany. The populist surge in Europe is being met with establishment lawfare and worse. Democracy is in retreat on the continent. The democracy deficit is only widening. Crosstalking Democracy Deficit, I'm joined by my guest, John Laughlin in Paris. He's a university lecturer in history and political philosophy. In Geneva, we have Guy Mitton. He is a journalist and deputy of the Grand Council of the Regional Parliament of Geneva. And in Greece, we cross to Dimitri Laskaros. He is a lawyer and a freelance journalist. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. John, let me go to you first in Paris. I mean, I mentioned countries, for example, France is big in the news because of the Le Pen story, but also Germany, Moldova. You know, it's all across Europe. And my fundamental question to all three of you is the establishment afraid of the people? Are they afraid of voters?
There's absolutely no doubt they're afraid of voters. And you're quite right, of course, that this is a trend. But on the other hand, France is much bigger than Moldova, obviously, or even than Romania. Bigger in terms of population, but bigger, I'm afraid to say, historically. You know, France is the birthplace of the French Revolution, of democracy and so on. So when democracy is closed down, as it was this week by the judicial decision, it's even more momentous, I would say, than the other events you've described. Unfortunately, it's not. This is not new. It may be shocking. It may be. It may excite the political commentariat for a while. But I'm afraid it's a very long trend, and it's only getting worse. When I say it's a long trend, I'm thinking back to 2005, when France and the Netherlands voted against the European Union constitutional treaty, but that was ignored. Or frankly, back to 1992, when Denmark voted against the Maastricht Treaty, and that was ignored as well. So unfortunately, there's a very long history of this, of either overturning or cancelling or ignoring elections. And in this case, the Le Pen decision is in pure continuity with these previous examples, because one of the most extraordinary things about the ruling is that the judges mentioned the damage that would be done to the European Union if she was allowed to stand for president. Well, this is an admittance that the system is building what the Commission itself, the European Commission itself, calls a European democracy shield to protect itself, as it were, from people who vote the wrong way. And it's an admission that the goal is, of course, to preserve the current European elite protected by the judiciary, by the media, by the universities, by all the other aspects of cultural hegemony, so that indeed no populist politician will be able to have the slightest effect on the system. On the contrary, the system is fighting back.
Yeah, Guy, if we can go to you in Geneva, this is a perfect a protection racket for the elites. I mean, no one can confront them. They'll be just taken off the ballot. Their election will be refused and damned to the people. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary for a continent that it preaches to the world every single day of the year. Go ahead, in Geneva.
Yes, I fully agree. I fully agree with what you said and what John said, because even in for me, it's really a deep trend, and it's not new, as it has been said. And it's also very less curious to observe that in a small democratic country such as Switzerland, the trend is the same. Because if we look at the democratic scene, we can see that there are more and more pressures against the right to exercise this democracy. We have the so-called direct democracy, but also in that sense, it's getting more and more limited in the, let's say, in the yield of the application of these rights. What is also surprising for me, as I am a journalist, that's the limitation of the freedom of expression. Yep. Because we can observe since now, let's say, for me, the, the difference of the worst step was done in 2013, 2014. But let's say before the Maidan and the Ukrainian first crisis. Already at that time, we could observe a limitation of freedom of expression. Yep. Because you have the elites, the center-right and the center-left, let's say like that, the Socialist Party, Christian Democrats, all trying to limit the access to the TV plateaus, to the radios, to the public debate, to any, let's say, dissident voice. Could be from the left, like we can see with the Bündnis, Sarah Wagenknecht Bündnis in Germany or Mélenchon in France, or it could be from the right, and the so-called far right, Rassemblement National and other voice. So that's a big trend in that sense.
Well, what is happening? Let me go to Dimitri here. It seems to me that the European elites are far more interested in protecting institutions, and they don't want any kind of public input.
Protecting institutions that entrench their power. That's exactly right. As Guy pointed out, it's not simply right-wing populists who are in the sights of the European elite. It's also left-wing populists. In Greece, where I am currently, you may all recall that in 2015, after a left-wing party came to power, pledging to fight this vicious austerity program that the ECB and the European Commission and the IMF sought to impose upon Greece, they called a referendum. Former Syriza Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, although he wasn't particularly inclined to oppose the European elites, the Greek people voted overwhelmingly to reject the austerity demands of the troika of creditors. And what did the troika do? They demanded that they accept an even harsher program of austerity than the voters had rejected. The other point I want to make, Peter, is that this is not a phenomenon that's confined, of course, to Europe. It's a Western phenomenon. Yeah. As we saw during the last 4 years leading up to the most recent presidential election, the Democrats and the deep state in the United States did everything possible to stop Donald Trump. And I want to be clear, I'm no fan of Donald Trump. But the fact of the matter is that he had a substantial amount of popular support. And the only reason why they failed to stop Donald Trump from running is because the US Constitution allows somebody with criminal convictions, and he now has one, to run nonetheless. But the US Constitution is hanging by a thread. And even the US eventually will go down this path.
Yes, and then Europe will even follow further. You know, John, Ursula von der Leyen is a very irritating person for many, many reasons, primarily because she's not very intelligent. But she always is talking about Europe. Well, who is she to Europe? I mean, I find it astounding that she can speak for the entire continent, maybe the European Union. But if you look at the way she speaks, she's speaking as if she's the emperor of Europe.
It's an old problem, Peter. I mean, the European Union has always used the word Europe to describe itself, and that's because they think that it gives them some kind of moral superiority. It's not new, that. I mean, it's completely ridiculous, as you say in your question, because we all know which is the biggest country in Europe, and that's the one that the European Union is trying to destroy. I was interested by what Dimitri said about the Americans likely to go down the same path. You may be right, Dimitri, but right now, or at least so far, they haven't. And, we're speaking very shortly after Donald Trump announced his famous tariffs, including against the European Union. We're speaking a couple of weeks and months after his election and after the ditching, if you like, of the Atlantic Alliance, at least on the rhetorical level. And this new gap, which has opened up between, on the one hand, Europe, which is plunging further into totalitarianism, and on the other hand, the United States of America, which, despite the lawfare, which of course was unleashed against him absolutely mercilessly throughout 2024 and even before then, it so far has not succeeded. And you may be right to say that the American Constitution is hanging by a thread, but it has worked. It's worked partly for constitutional legal reasons, but also, I think, because of the strength of Trump's personality, and of course because of his support in the Republican Party. And that is exactly, those two last things are exactly what Europe lacks. There is nobody in Europe who is prepared to go over the top, who is prepared to go up to the barricades and fight on these kinds of issues. And there is definitely no political structure in place, including, I think, probably not even the Rassemblement National in France, which would be prepared to do what the Republicans have done.
Yeah, but at the same time...
Peter, I just want to respond to that particular point. I think you're quite right, but it is also true that Trump himself is eviscerating the separation of powers. So, for example, these tariffs that he just imposed, you know, I think it's in the range of 54% on Chinese goods entering the United States across the board. He's invoking a piece of legislation which is designed to deal with emergencies, has very strict requirements, and this is why he keeps talking about fentanyl coming from China, which is a fiction. He's using that as a completely fabricated emergency to justify bypassing Congress, which is a constitutional requirement, for this type of dramatic legislation, which have profound impacts on the U.S. economy. So Trump has benefited from these constitutional protections and is now in the process.
Yeah, well, but Dimitri, I need to push back a little bit. It's an executive order. It's not legislation. Though I agree with you, this kind of legislation should be coming from Congress. Okay, let me go to Guy now in Geneva. The freedom of speech issue is very important because this is how they're muzzling political speech. And when you muzzle political speech, political parties are paralyzed. And unfortunately, we see this trend continuing. Go ahead, Guy.
Yes, no, for sure. Just coming back to the tariff, I must also say that's also a deep trend. It's not quite new, this tariff wars. And it has been also made by Europeans, because Europeans has made tariffs against the China's imports, especially with cars. So everybody is trying to build some tariff, not only Trump, but yeah. Coming back to Europe, we have to take into consideration that the European Union was never democratic. It has been made on a technocratic base, bureaucratic base, without any form of democracy, because all these people, and especially Mrs. von der Leyen, was never elected. They are just co-opted, as it is the case for the judges, for the lawyers, you know, the court, the European court. So all this lay of people are co-opted. They are sharing the same values,
unfortunately, the way it was designed
never
is that
democratic.
Democratic because people tend to disagree when they don't like how things are going. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the democracy deficit. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the democracy deficit. Okay, let's go back to John in Paris. In the first part of the program, Dimitri got the right word, the operative word here, emergency. And this is what we're seeing. We saw this with COVID. It's an emergency. Civil liberties have to be suspended. Even Russia to some extent in the United States. I know people have been persecuted in Europe for having wrong think when it comes to Ukraine. And that is even more the case now. I mean, you know, Russiagate in Europe is playing an important role here. Romania, turning into the biggest military base for NATO, is right there on the border of Russia. That's no coincidence they want to get rid of people that think wrong. John.
There's absolutely no doubt that Russia is the uniting issue in all these cases. You're quite right to say that. But the fact is that, as Guy Mettan said, the European Union, the system, is structured against the people. It's inspired by a belief in technocracy, by a fear and a suspicion of free votes. The word populism itself is an insult. Anybody who says that they represent the people is regarded as a threat. But my worry is to pick up again on what Dimitri said, is that the majority, I believe, and I can hardly bring myself to say this, so much it pains me to do it, but I'm afraid I believe that a majority of Europeans will support these measures. I do not believe that people will go into the streets in France to stand up for Marine Le Pen. I don't believe that they will do so in Romania to stand up for Călin Georgescu. I think, on the contrary, the conditioning, the media brainwashing, the judicial, we say in French, encadrement, the framing of this, the judicial framing of the political process, all these aspects unfortunately mean that also, because you mentioned COVID, Peter, in your question, the fear factor, fear of Russia, fear of COVID, fear of whatever. I'm afraid I do not hold out much hope, unlike in America, where for whatever reason it didn't happen, the worst didn't happen. They didn't manage to close down democracy in America. And I think that's also partly, of course, for cultural reasons. There's a very strong ethic of liberty in America, as everyone knows. On the European continent, I'm afraid that's not the case. And therefore, what I see in this latest thing with Marine Le Pen is the system once again counterattacking, once again showing that it has power, and once again, frankly, winning a victory.
Well, Guy, then if we can extrapolate from what John just said, and I agree with him, is that then, well, this is a new form of feudalism. I mean, this is the protection of elites, of institutions, and the people are expected to support it because they have no power. They cannot dissent. And if you dissent, if you dissent, you cannot participate. Go ahead, Guy.
Yeah, exactly. Because now, since, let's say, a decade or more or less 2 decades, we have a growing secession of the upper elites with, the, let's say, the common people. And it's very, very clear since now many years that this difference, this gap is growing. And the majority of the people is let aside, is put aside, and that's the main problem. But yes, for me, that's a kind of new feudalism, a new plutocracy, which has taken the power inside the European countries. We denounce here, you know, the Russian oligarchs and so on. But in fact, the real oligarchy is here, is in the Western countries. And these guys, they don't want now to share the power as it was the case formerly. And also they use the image of the big nasty Russian as a kind of, you know, image. Just they always speak, the media always speak about the big nasty Russian in order to gather the people under the, you know, the cover of the elites. And that's the problem. And I agree with John. I don't think the people are ready to demonstrate, to protest. What is a little bit for me more optimistic, we have seen during the COVID crisis in Switzerland, we got two popular votes against the COVID measures, you know, because it was a kind of totalitarian state during the COVID. All the rights were cancelled. But we have two votes, and at least each time, 40% of the population voted against the totalitarian measures. And so for me, when the people have the possibility to vote discreetly, secretly, you know, inside their box, 40% of the population disagree. And for me, it's, let's say, something more optimistic.
Yeah, but I mean...
But they are not ready to go in the street.
Yeah, but I mean, but as John pointed out, I mean, you can have a referendum, you can have an election. It doesn't mean it's going to play, pan out. I mean, unfortunately, what it is that it's a procedure that is meaningless. You have to vote, but you have to vote a certain way. Okay, that's not democracy. But that's going to someone else's dance and tapping to their tune. It doesn't make any sense. Dimitri, one of the things
we can call it a zombie democracy.
There you go. I said feudalism, zombie democracy. Yeah. Great, Dimitri. I mean, Ukraine is in the news all the time, but what's really interesting is how much the Europeans, European Union, NATO, want to support Ukraine, but it's Europe that's becoming like Ukraine. lack of political participation, control of speech, a very powerful police state. But they want to protect that. They're projecting themselves onto what they're becoming. Dmitry.
Precisely. But when you say Europe, Peter, it's important to be clear that we're talking about the European elite and not the people.
Absolutely.
And I share the John and Guy's concern about the lack of, popular resistance to what is happening. I wouldn't say, however, where I part company with John is in his use of the word support. I don't think most Europeans support these policies. I think what has happened is that they have been beaten into submission, and they've come to the conclusion that exercising their rights, whether it be at the ballot box, the right to protest, is futile. And so they're not supporting necessarily, they're acquiescing. And a perfect example of this is Europe's extraordinary rush towards militarization. I think polls show that most Europeans do not support massive increases in military spending to counter this fictitious Russia threat at the expense of social programs. But a lot of people are asking themselves, what is the point in my going out into the streets? What is the point in my casting a vote? Because in the past, that has led nowhere. And this is not a distinction without a difference, because if people actually do not support these policies and they're simply acquiescing, what happens is that popular anger will accumulate over time, and eventually there will be a social explosion. That's what's going to happen in Europe. Eventually, if they keep going down this path, I believe that ultimately there is going to be tremendous instability in the continent, and these people are playing with fire.
John, would you like to reply to that?
Well, I'm afraid I'm more pessimistic. I mean, of course, I agree that they've been beaten into submission. On the other hand, people are very susceptible to propaganda. And if they believe that someone is extreme right, as a lot of Romanians do about Călin Georgescu, then they will gang up against him. In France, where, unlike in Romania, you have this Le Pen party, which has been on the political scene for many decades and which is now the largest, and indeed has been for a while, the largest party in the country, both in terms of votes and in terms of representation in parliament. It's the biggest party, but the number of people in France who are against it is greater at the moment and has been for many years than the people who are in favour of it. And we saw in last year's general election in France that centrists and extreme leftists preferred to ally with each other and remove themselves from constituencies which were being contested in order to beat the Rassemblement National. And that is a factor which unfortunately is very much still in force. And yes, maybe anger will build up over time, maybe there'll be an explosion, or maybe with immigration running at hundreds of thousands in all European countries every year, the actual composition of the nation will change, as it has been changing now for many decades, and the national element will demographically literally disappear. That's also a long-term process which is underway.
Yeah.
And so I'm afraid...
If I may just quickly respond to one point John made.
It keeps counterattacking, as I said earlier, until it fails to hold on to power, which it hasn't done yet, then I'm afraid we're in for a long period of decline.
Dmitry, go ahead.
So I assume, John, when you said extreme leftist, you were referring to Jean-Luc Mélenchon. I myself don't regard him as extreme. I think he's a leftist, but I think he's a pretty actually restrained leftist. But the point I really want to make here is that Jean-Luc Mélenchon just came out with a statement condemning what they're doing to Marine Le Pen, and said that this should ultimately be left to the voters of France. So I'm not going to comment on the machinations and who allied with whom in the most recent French election, but he has come out with a principled statement saying that the French voters should decide whether this conviction, even assuming that it's grounded in evidence in the law, disqualifies her from being the president of France. So I think that both on the right and the left, you are seeing, I'm a little more hopeful than you.
Yeah,
but
there's another
to find common ground.
But there's another question that isn't being asked here, and I think it's a profound one. Let me go to Guy. Maybe people don't care about democracy. They don't care about it anymore. Because why should they? Why should they? You don't get what you want. Guy.
Yes. Probably that's a really good question, and it is worthy to question that than facts. It could be the fact. The problem is, as the less you have the possibility to vote effectively and to have your votes as recognized. It was not the case, as John mentioned, for the European Constitution in France in 2005. But the less the people have the possibility to vote, the more they lose their trust in the system. And also they say, because they are abandoned by the system, they say the same parties sharing the spoils, you know, sharing the profit of the system, the center-right, the center and the center-left, they alternate to the power, but they are just sharing the business, the profits of the power, excluding the people and excluding the leftists.
Gentlemen, we're rapidly running out of time. But you know, one thing I think, you know, we put too much trust into institutions. We have to start trusting ourselves. We have to return to that. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Geneva, Paris, and in Greece. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.